Hello, I'm Dr. Susie Godson. I'm a research psychologist and co-founder of Tell Me, a mental health support community for young people. Each month on this podcast, we talk to a young person who's been using Tell Me to find out more about their life experience. We've recently been doing a research project on diabetes in Somerset, and so this episode is looking at diagnosis and what happened when Mally, who's our next guest, suddenly found himself feeling incredibly ill one day. Mally, welcome. At what age were you when you were diagnosed?
Hello. Yeah, I was 18 when my diagnosis happened to me. It was an experience, let's say that. When it came to my diagnosis, it kind of came quite abruptly over the span of like a week or two. I had a lot of small things happen over that span of time, drinking a lot mainly, and very frequent mood swings. I was not thinking about things very well. Like, I would be very forgetful as well, which was very strange for me, because usually I'm quite, like, I got a big attention to detail and certain stuff, and I was all over the place. Nobody really thought that I had type 1.
And how long did those symptoms go on for?
The one that lasted the longest was me over drinking. It was crazy. I was drinking 2-liter bottles of water in the span of like 10 minutes.
Didn't anybody comment on the fact that you were drinking like 2-liter bottles of water? That's a lot. That's almost dangerous, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it wasn't like super frequent, but like when I went out, for example, I would drink like a lot. And obviously through that, I was obviously like going to the loo a lot as well.
Did you feel tired?
Yeah, I think that's probably why I became quite hot-headed as well, because I was very drowsy. I think my kind of mindset was just like, let me just get through this. I might just feel ill. I feel a bit off. It'll pass and stuff. I remember my dad's telling me that somebody had told him from work that it could be diabetes.
So was there anything that you think that might have triggered it in you? Wait, did you have an illness or?
I think I had a chest infection or something to do with that. I was very, you know, there was a lot of, I wouldn't say like necessarily breathing problems, but like, you know, sometimes it hurt to breathe. I think I was having those like symptoms, but then that started happening. So I think I was having this process of like, you know, this chest infection and then the symptoms coming on and then it all kind of culminating. I've noticed as well, a lot of other people I've talked to, younger people, especially around COVID, a lot of people got it when they had got COVID, for example.
Oh, that's so interesting. Teenage boys are not known for their propensity for visiting doctors. So had you actually told anybody that you were struggling with your breathing or?
Through a lot of like my experience, I was telling my like dad that I was feeling quite off and that there was things wrong. And, you know, obviously, as I said, my dad like was talking about it to coworkers and stuff. My mum was a bit concerned, but as you said, you know, I think I might have probably played it off a bit when I could have maybe shown a lot more concern about it. Let's say I didn't have much of a determination to go to a doctor. I was kind of hard-headed and was just like, you know what, I'm gonna just lay on it. Hopefully it'll pass. And then I proceeded to not have the best experience. I wouldn't give it a 5-star rating, let's say.
So it didn't get better. So what happened next?
Essentially, after a lot of my symptoms, I had one day where it just hit its like worst. And I woke up and I just had a really huge headache. I just couldn't move around right. I felt really weak. And I was throwing up in the morning as well, which was quite, you know, concerning. Little did I know at the time, I was having a ketoacidosis, which until modern medicine, 100% mortality rate, terrible, terrible experience to go through. I literally wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy. I remember that day quite vaguely because a lot of it is more the hospital after, but I remember my heart rate being really like just beating. I felt like I was like my heart was beating like 15 times a second. It was horrible. I tried to have a bath to try and calm down, but that didn't work. So I had to get out of the bath, and my head to toe like was in agony. Every part of my body was hurting. There was not a single part of my body, a single bone, a single area in my body that wasn't hurting. It was my eyes, my head, my jaw hurt, my chest hurt, my hands, like everything hurt. It was just awful. And everybody around me at the time, like the people who were responsible for me, my mum and my dad, my mum lives away from us because my parents aren't together anymore. So there was only a limited amount of contact she had with me. And my dad was going out to his canal boat because, again, we all thought it was something that would pass. So I was only left with my sibling and my other sibling's girlfriend. And they couldn't do much. So I just remember calling my mum. As soon as my mum heard me speak, she literally just completely raced over to my house and was trying to help me. And I think this is the part where I just started blacking out.
Wow. Didn't anybody think to call an ambulance?
They did. There was an ambulance. My mum and my dad were calling an ambulance because obviously as soon as my mum figured out something was wrong with me, she was banging on at my dad's to come now, pretty much. The ambulance, unfortunately, from what I know, the ambulance never came. The people on the ambulance couldn't guarantee if there was insulin on board, much less. So pretty much what would have happened is they would have came here, grabbed me, and then just took me to a hospital. But that's just not, it just was not going to work.
So at that point, did they realize that it was diabetes if they were talking about needing insulin on the ambulance?
Yeah. I think what was happening was my dad must have been talking about the symptoms and what was going on earlier before this event. And right. People on the ambulance or the phone line, whatever, must have said like, no, this is a ketoacidosis or something like that. When my dad heard that they couldn't guarantee that there was any insulin on board, my dad got me. And he was absolutely racing down the road, like just literally just straight on. He just didn't care. It was honestly this was like where my mum had her instincts to come over to take care of me. Now my dad is like, all right, I'm saving my boy, right? And he was literally going to Yeovil Hospital. He was speeding down the road. He said he was going over 100, which is crazy. But I can just understand just that mental headspace. You're just like, there's no law. There's nothing. There is just my son and I need to save him. So he was just blasting down the road. And he eventually got into Yeovil. And my mum was in the back of the car trying to keep me awake, pretty much screaming to keep me awake. But eventually my dad got into Yeovil and he got the attention of the police, obviously, who were going down, and he got pulled over. And this woman literally was at his window just saying like, what are you doing? This is the most ridiculous driving I've ever seen. And in my dad's words, he literally just like, as she was banging on, he just closed the window and just continued. And she ran back into her police car and was chasing him. And my dad, he used the police cars to split the traffic. So the traffic was splitting to accommodate him. He eventually got to the hospital and the police saw the state I was in. My dad obviously must have opened the car and just shown that what state I was in. And they helped me into hospital. The police did, which I'm really obviously thankful for, even though I was unconscious, so I couldn't really thank them. But I was the complete top priority from what I was told. I was being worked on, and the nurses told my parents that if I came back any later, if I was there any later, I probably wouldn't have made it. If those events didn't happen the way they did, if anything changed, if my dad was a bit later or I called my mum a bit later, or my mum didn't get here on time, or she thought I was just really ill, I just would have died. Everything worked perfectly to say, like, for my life to be saved that day.
It is a pretty profound experience, but when you look back, does it make you realize that understanding the symptoms of diabetes and what to look out for in young people who might be developing the condition, that information surely needs to be more widely available and more people need to understand so that these things are picked up before young people get to the point that you are at?
Oh yeah, no, I completely agree. I have no idea why, like, so many things like illnesses and all these things, like, I knew about this and that and the other, but I just didn't know anything about diabetes. I was never taught anything about diabetes, really. I obviously know about, like, the big ones, like, obviously, for example, like, cancer. A lot of people know a lot about that. But considering that diabetes is another, like, gene-related disease that can be passed to other people, why do we not know as much about it? And why isn't it as well documented as, say, cancer is? I feel like I'm not necessarily saying that one deserves more than the other, because they're both incredibly tragic diseases that kill people. I just want to know, like, how come I knew about this one thing, but this other thing I just knew nothing about? There's a lot less coverage of diabetes, and there's a lot of stereotypes with it as well that isn't really particularly nice either.
What kind of stereotypes?
Well, over the course of my near 2 year experience with diabetes, I feel like there's a lot of judgment with some people. Some people who are very ill-informed think about the other form of diabetes, which is type 2, which is obviously can be related to people who suffer from obesity and unhealthy diets and such. And obviously, when your stereotype for something is you're fat, when you're talking to, say, people online who don't know you face to face, like obviously a lot of young people like myself do, saying that you're diabetic and then having that immediate, just that judgment just immediately, is really disheartening. And I think it makes a lot of people scared to talk about it.
One of the awful things about type 1 is you can't get rid of it. There's no cure. And it's a condition that you have to manage day in, day out. So when you were in the hospital, what was it like to finally come around and realize that you were going to have to deal with this thing for the rest of your life?
So when I woke up in the hospital, I remember looking down and just seeing my mum and dad just staring at me, and I've just never seen them stare like that intense before. All I kind of remember from that evening was just, duh, 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 you're going to be okay, Marley, duh, 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 diabetes. And I was just like, what is going on? Like, I'm looking at my hands and there's just drips. I'm looking, just there's like tubes and wires and there's just people around me and I'm just in this bed. I was laid down, I could barely move, and I was just completely vulnerable. I don't know if anybody can kind of relate to this kind of feeling, but that feeling of vulnerability and the fact that, like, I have no power in this situation and I'm just at the mercy of other people taking care of me was really scary. It made me feel a lot of fear, especially considering this was on the 9th of March and my birthday's the 19th of February. So I just turned 18 and I had this massive, like, you know, raise my fist in the air. I am now an adult. I have this, like, power almost. And then I just got immediately just shut down and brought to reality. And now I'm in this weak, powerless state.
There is a lot to process. You know, it's not like being sick and getting better. It's like being sick and learning how to inject yourself 8 times a day so that you remain able to function. It's difficult like that.
It's like throughout my life, mentally, I've been like moving to different kind of like houses, and it's like suddenly I have this massive just bag of stuff, which is diabetes. And I have to, like, now when I'm moving to different stages of my life, it's not something that I can just throw away. I've got to keep it, and I've got to learn to carry it with everything else. And I think that is probably the hardest pill to swallow. I mean, as soon as I left hospital, I was literally in tears for days. Like, I just couldn't hold that kind of calm structure anymore, because now I was out of the hospital, I could finally, like, let myself be kind of open and feel certain emotions. And I know for some people that's quite hard. I was looking at like these sensors and these pens, and I was just like, what am I even doing? What is this? Like, I'm used to just getting up and being able to just run down the stairs, eat some food, run back up the stairs, brush my teeth, do this, do that, do that. Now I've got to get up, and it's just like sensor, pen. I've got to think about what I'm about to eat. I've got to measure what I'm about to eat. I've got to take the exact stuff I need for that. Otherwise, I'm going to have a hypo, which means I'm going to feel horrible. If I do too low, it's going to make me have a hyper, which means I'm going to feel bad again. So it's like, now that I've had a life that's had a small amount of steps, now it's in, like, now it feels like it's quadrupled. For a lot of people, especially, I feel like somebody like me who's knows what it's like to live through your life without it, having it suddenly integrated into your life when you're an adult is so, like, shocking.
I guess also when you get diagnosed as a child, your parent is responsible for managing your insulin. When you get diagnosed at 18, presumably it was all just handed over to you.
Yeah, I was responsible for myself, and I have been. My parents have had pretty much no play in it, aside from their third person's perspective of seeing how I'm dealing with it. Another thing is, like, yeah, if I was younger, then my parents would have been able to shoulder a bit of it and kind of work with it with me. That might have helped in one area. It could have had a knock-on effect and been worse in another area, maybe because I would have gotten maybe very embarrassed about it as a kid, because I would have had a more, like, I guess, a more fragile kind of state of mind where, like, you know, the anxiety I would feel could really affect me growing up. So on one level, I'd like to think, yeah, if I was diagnosed earlier on, it would have been easier. But maybe it wouldn't have been. Maybe it was meant to happen now. I don't resent what's happened to me now. And I feel like even if there's a lot of negative feelings about it, I feel that I wouldn't have it another way, because this way I'm sat here talking about it and I'm confident and I'm moving forward. And if anything was different, I might not be here.
Did it have a big impact on you then when you came out of hospital and you were learning how to manage it? And how were you feeling emotionally at that point?
I felt like it was a big barrier and something that I didn't put much mind to, because while I had to learn to deal with it, I also had a lot of other things going on in my life. For example, I had college. I was getting through my final project for that year. And, you know, I had to have a few weeks off because I had to learn and figure stuff out. So when I came back, it was like, I've got all this stuff I haven't catched up on. I've got all of this. I want to get a good grade. So what do? I push it back. This barrier, this experience, I have to just let it sit. And I had to get the best grade I could. And I did. I got a good grade. I was really happy with it. And I was very, 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 very proud of myself. But through that, I was in denial when eventually I had to think about it and I had to internalize it over like a summer break leading on to my next year. That's when it really started hitting me, and it was getting really bad on my mental state. I started the new college year doing absolutely nothing. I was sat just bumming out, talking to friends, and just focusing on things that made me happy. And that's good on one level, focusing on the things that you personally like and the things that bring you happiness. But unfortunately, in a college environment, that's just not going to do. So over the course of that time, I've had to progress a lot very quickly in my head. And I think getting youth support work and telling people about my feelings and searching for help when I know that I can't help myself has been a very revealing and a very important experience in my own progression.
And how are you managing your diabetes now? Is that all kind of second nature to you?
I have my bad days. I would say that I've had very, very bad days. There's some days I just don't even want to get out of bed. And that is a struggle, especially if it's on a college day and I don't want to be late and I have responsibilities with work. I've got deadlines, maybe plans with friends and plans with other people. Sometimes getting out of bed is a challenge. I feel through the support I'm getting and the support that I've reached out to get, that is made those days so much easier, because I just know that maybe if I'm having a rough morning, if I at least get myself up and I get to college or something, you know, there's people to talk to, there's my teachers, there's my friends, they're gonna be a chain that's gonna help me.
How did you get to that point? So presumably you had a diabetes clinician. Did they know that you were really struggling psychologically?
Not really. I think when I was getting discharged from the hospital, I was blocking a lot of it out. And through that, I feel that they didn't know, because I just wasn't just talking on that level. I was just like, all right, yeah, got your injection needle. Uh-huh, yeah, diet, but let me out.
I think it's interesting because in a way, what you're saying is that you got this medical condition and it, you know, with it comes all this paraphernalia and all this stuff that you have to do, and you're dealing with the, you know, day-to-day stuff around managing diabetes. Your emotional self caught up more slowly and it took you time to process how you were feeling. So it was only quite a long time later that you suddenly really began to feel incredibly stressed and anxious about what you were coping with. And that was the point at which you started talking to a youth worker.
I think through a lot of it, my clinician, we'll just go with clinician, was in contact every so often. But because of days in college and my own memory, there was appointments that I had missed. And so they said to me pretty, like, I wouldn't say bluntly, but like with obviously a lot of sympathy and care, that they're just like, they just looked at me and just said, like, you've just been dealing with this by yourself. And it was true. I was just, my head space was just like, okay, I've got this thing. I just need to be calm, deal with it. But through that, I also bottled it up, because through my kind of mindset of just wanting to just deal with it and just get on with it, I was not giving myself the chance to emotionally deal with it. It's like there was two parts of my head. There was one part that was completely just up zipping around like everywhere, just trying to find things to do to probably just ignore it. But then there's just this part of myself that was slowly like deteriorating and slowly just starting to crumple through all the thoughts and stress of it when I did have time to myself.
Did anybody talk to you about diabetes distress and about the relationship between diabetes and anxiety and depression at any point?
I don't think so. Not when I was in hospital. When you're in like a high intensive care like unit, especially with like, I was in like a ward with a, well, not like I have my own little personal room, but it was like, you know,
when I first actually got up and was like walking down and looking who was like beside me in different rooms, like it was all like in, like old people and people who were like struggling. I felt like the only young person in there. So obviously I think I was being treated in maybe a bit of a different kind of way.
I feel like a lot of people were just sort of seeing me as more of just like a patient than a person. I don't know if that makes any sense to you. I just feel that, especially with stuff like this, I don't think there's enough support for people who are going through these events. Like, for example, I feel like through my story, through what's happened, I feel like I should have gotten a youth support worker way sooner. I only got it because I was essentially telling my nurse how upset I was with certain things. And even then, I wasn't really saying, like, I'm depressed, I feel horrible. I was saying, like, oh, yeah, I'm not dealing with it very well. And, you know, I'm struggling to, like, remember these things and stuff like that. So I was still being quite, like, you know, I was still saying things that I don't think a lot of people would before I was given a youth support worker or, like, you know, referred. That support, just that youth support, has done absolute wonders for me. With this youth support worker, it's very informal and it's very friendly. And I feel like I've got like a friend rather than an appointment with my designated therapist. Like, you know what I mean?
And it's a friend that understands your condition as well as understands the stress that you're under.
Yeah, no, exactly. And through a lot of like the chats that I've had with them and, you know, stuff like that, it's made me feel a lot more confident in myself. And I've made it small improvements about my diagnosis and how I treat it.
Is that why you find Tell Me peer support community helpful as well? Because it's just there for you if you want it or if you don't want it.
Yeah, it's a lot easier to make the decision to ask for help because there's a lot less at stake. I guess like with Tell Me, it's anonymous as well. With that, you feel a lot less pressured. I don't know, like, I guess pressured by yourself to do things. I've been reading a few stories on Tell Me and some like people are really like opening up on quite a deep, deep level. And it's really nice to see. On some level, I know how hard it is to actually ask for help. So kind of being able to put your thoughts somewhere, even if somebody doesn't say anything, I feel like just venting is helpful.
And since you started opening up to the youth worker and through Tell Me, have you started feeling better?
Yeah, I've been starting to feel a lot better. Even just reading the stories on Tell Me has been very, like, relieving. Like, I saw a story about somebody who had a ketoacidosis like me at an older age. And I think that just itself made me feel better knowing that there is somebody out there who is going through what I'm going through. Just not being alone, even if, you know, you guys might not know each other or you guys would never meet or anything like that. Just knowing that there's another person that understands you makes it like that. That really helps me.
So, Mally, thank you so much. That was absolutely fascinating. You've been listening to the Tell Me About It podcast. If anything in today's podcast has resonated with you, then we'd love you to join the Tell Me community by downloading the Tell Me app on the app or the Play Store, or you can go to tellme.app and access the web app. See you next month.